Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 450. On the podcast today, CEO of Caledonia Mining, that's CMCL ticker, Steve Curtis talks about their 2016 quarter one production update. And I tell you what, this is a small gold miner that's increasing production, has a very healthy profit, and pays a dividend. Almost unheard of, you know, for this size of company. Worth a listen. Plus, CEO of Independent Resources, Greg Coleman, updates the market on the Khazar Hadada permit in Tunisia. We also chat about other things going on with the company. And Executive Chairman of Be Heard Group, BHRD, Peter Scott, talks about the company's future plans and ambitions. Also, today's penny stock with potential is EOG, Europa Oil and Gas. And also, I've got to thank, I think it's Masman, for his 5-star rating and review on Twitter. I'll read that later.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Caledonia Mining, that's CMCL ticker, Steve Curtis. Thanks for coming back on, Steve.
That's a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Now, Steve, of course, you've been on before. People may have missed that. So if you can give us a broad outline as to what you do there at Caledonia.
Sure. We are the owners of 49% of the Blanket Gold Mine in Zimbabwe. It is the only asset of operating nature that we have. We've got a few other small either exploration properties or mines on care and maintenance, but we won't talk about those because they're not the focus of our business. So we've got 49% of the Blanket mine, and the reason it's 49% is that we are fully indigenized in terms of the law of the country. So our 51% shareholding partners in Zimbabwe are four groups of people. We've got staff, we've got the community, we've got some local Zimbabwean businessmen, and we've got the government. And we all work together to develop the Blanket mine that we bought from Kinross Gold in 2006. And we are at a very exciting time of increasing our gold production from the 42,000 ounces that we did for the calendar year 2015 up to about 80,000 ounces by 2020, 2021, by going below our lowest level, which we are operating at currently, which is 750 meters, and we're going to develop the mine below that level, and we are sinking a new shaft from surface down to 1,080 meters to access those mineralized areas below 750, and we will commence production from that new shaft sort of mid-2018. So that's who we are.
Yeah, so when people hear about Zimbabwe, they often think of, you know, Robert Mugabe, and, you know, and it's quite surprising. You know, you're a company there operating profitably, you're paying a dividend, and so what's it like, you know, the environment there for a business?
Let's be realistic. We're in Africa. Africa has got its challenges, but Zimbabwe is a country that has got its clearly defined rules that they would like people to comply with. Indigenization has been the law of the land that has probably got the most publicity and probably negative publicity. But because of the nature of our business, we didn't have a problem with engaging with Zimbabwean partners and indigenizing the business, because the most important thing, it is cash generative. It has the ability to expand. And we're committed to the country, so complying with the laws of the country made perfect sense to us. There are challenges in terms of power, but most of Southern Africa seems to suffer from that. We at the mine do not suffer from it. We have an uninterrupted supply agreement with the authorities, and that has worked very, very well for many years. We do have sufficient diesel generating capacity if there was a power problem, but we use that really very, very intermittently. Droughts are a problem in the area, but again, those haven't affected us or affected the water consumption that the mine needs. And then the biggest positive for Zimbabwe is that they have a very well-educated workforce. And we benefit as an entity who operate there. We benefit from this very, very willing labor force, educated, who want to work and can be trained. And then I suppose the last issue is that because of its proximity to Johannesburg, that has got a very large service industry for the mining sector. Zimbabwe, even though it has got a struggling economy, we as a business and many other businesses can access goods and services from the South African service industry. So all in all, Zimbabwe for us is a good place to operate.
Yeah, well, like I said, it hasn't affected the financials of the company. I mean, looking at last year's figures there, 5.6 million profit for the period, and you're paying dividends there around about, 5% on? So it's looking very good. So I was looking at that on your website, the shaft. I don't think people realize how much work goes into that, and I'd implore people to go there and look at that, because it is phenomenal. And so the point of that is, like you said, at the moment, last year, so you're aiming for 50,000 ounces this year, is that right?
That's quite right, yes. We'll go from 42,000 ounces in 2015 up to 50,000 ounces this year.
Okay, and I see that the quarter year in year is better, but due to holidays, the quarter for the previous quarter was slightly down. So how are you achieving this ramp up in production there?
Well, part of the life of mine plan that we announced in 2014 is that we have completed a project that we call the Six Winds, which is a subvertical shaft which goes from just above 750 meter level to below the 750 meter level in the blanket ore body area. If you do look on the website, you'll see some pictures about how the mine is structured. You've got five or six vertical, near vertical ore bodies, and the blanket ore body is the traditional heart of the mine. So the Six Winds has now gone below 750 meter level, and that is now in mineralization in the ore body, and additional production will start to come out of that area this year, and that only really commenced at a very, very low level towards the latter part of March. So going forward, we will be able to access more ore from that area. The first part of the expansion plan, the life of mine plan, was a tramming loop at the 750 meter level, which just enables us to move more material underground. We did have some logistical issues, but having completed the tramming loop sort of mid-year last year, our ability to handle more material is evident. And if you look at some of the other presentations on our website, you'll see that Q3 and Q4 volumes were dramatically higher than previously, and that's as a result of the Six Winds, of the tramming loop. Sorry. We have also completed a decline, which has also taken us below the 750 meter level into the body called the AR Main AR South area. That is just really to create flexibility. It wasn't embarked upon to blow the lights out of our 50,000 ounce, but flexibility in the mining space is crucial. It enables us to mine in many, many more areas. It enables us to manage the grade. And a combination of all of these aspects will enable us to increase our tonnage up to levels that will put us in a position in the fourth quarter where we'll be producing about 14,000 ounces at slightly higher grades than we have at the moment as part of the life of mine planning. And it's just a combination of multiple things that we're doing at the mine that will enable us over a period of time to increase the gold production.
Okay. And what is estimated life of this mine?
Well, as we stand today, we're probably looking at about 11 years. One of the aspects that we have increased dramatically is the deep drilling. And you will have seen last year that we put out two resource updates during the year, and our intention will be to repeat that this year and the years going forward. So as we develop more and more from a gold production perspective, we obviously need to increase our reserve and resource base. The nature of our bodies, ore bodies, doesn't allow us to build up massive resource bases. So we're never going to be a mine that's got 20, 30 years life of mine. Because of the nature of these near vertical ore bodies, you need to be deep, you need to be close to the ore bodies with your development and your infrastructure so that you can do targeted drilling and open up those ore bodies. But we're sitting, yes, as I say, with about 10, 11 years at the moment. And as we ramp up to the 80,000 ounce, we will be doing a lot of work towards sustaining the development of that resource base.
Yeah, and it's nice to see, well, gold is, I think, it's bottomed out there and it's had a bit of a rally of late, hasn't it?
Well, it was a very nice way to start 2016. 2015 was a tough year with a declining gold price. And especially for us at Blanket, because this expansion project I've been talking about is fully funded by the Blanket operation cash flow on its own. So with a declining gold price and nearly $18 million of capex spent last year, you can imagine that cash is something that we watch very, very closely. With our production increasing to 50,000 ounces this year, we would expect that the cash generation would increase, obviously subject to gold price. So having started the year with a stronger gold price and a good quarter, slightly above what our plan was, we're happy to be where we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. All right, Steve, well, listen, it sounds like heading in the right direction, definitely. And there aren't many, miners of your size that do pay a cracking dividend and have a nice profit. So, you are amongst a few there. But if people needed more convincing, could you give us three reasons why an investor should put Caledonia Mining on their watch list?
Well, yes, I think you've already mentioned it, the dividend. Mm-hmm. We value return to shareholders. So we have just announced, I think it's our 12th quarterly dividend, it's important to us to retain a dividend distribution to shareholders. So the dividend is very important, and it's absolutely our intention to continue that. We have got a expansion project, which we can manage within the ambit of our resources. It's fully funded, so that should be attractive. We are coming off a small base, so there are not many gold mining companies of our size that have got cash in the bank, which we do have, who have got a growth plan, who've got a dividend culture and return to shareholder, and that we believe is undervalued and underrated by the market at this point in time for a number of probably valid reasons. Gold is a tough commodity. Gold miners, our size, maybe our jurisdiction. But I think quarter by quarter, we prove that you can successfully do business in Zimbabwe, and that we are profitable and that we are cash generative. And it's up to management to prove to the market that we will deliver this project, and therefore we should be able to increase our production. And I think we would expect to receive a re-rating from the market at some point in time once we start delivering all these bits and pieces. And I think the one issue I must mention also in terms of the dividend, we have just migrated the legal entity Caledonia Mining from Canada across to Jersey. That was completed in March. And one of the purposes is obviously to have the legal entity closer to the center of our operation and our investor community being Europe and the UK and North America, and to have our place of effective management there. But importantly, also the dividend distributions and the first one happening at the end of this month are now free of any withholding taxes. So shareholders are going to actually receive an even bigger return. So, you know, that's who we are, and we're very excited.
Marvellous stuff. Right? Just one more thing. I looked at the chart there, and I was looking at the 30th of March. There was a bit of a jump in price there. And I see one of the non-execs there. He's obviously confident in the company because he's had a couple of purchases, hasn't he?
Yes, that's right. With the nature of our business, 30th of just towards the end of March, we announced our annual results for 2015. So we came out of a closed period. So one of our independent directors, John Kelly, he wanted to buy some shares. He bought some. I exercised 65,000 options, and I took up some new shares myself. We believe in this project. We believe it's undervalued. And if you have a look at the share price over the last month, we're very happy with how things are transpiring. And I think a lot of that is to do with the dividend, the stronger gold price. What we will see and what we expect to see in 2016 is a quarter and quarter increase in the gold production, ramping up to the total annual number of 50,000. But importantly, when we finish 2016, we'll be on a production rate of around 14,000 ounces a quarter, which when you annualize that, we're getting very close to the 60,000 ounce level. And that's the target that we're heading into 2017 with. So We're not trying to shoot the lights out. We're trying to make sure this is a managed process at a pace that we can achieve. And most important for us is to actually do what we're telling the market.
Marvellous, Steve. It's lovely to chat to you. And please come again on soon when you have further news.
Thanks very much for having me. Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Greg Coleman, CEO of Independent Resources. That's IRG, the ticker. Greg, thanks for coming back on.
Yes, good afternoon, Justin.
Good. Now, listen, we'll mention the talk about the RNS just released today in a bit. But if there's people out there not aware of IRG or Independent Resources, give us a broad overview of what you're about there, please, Greg.
Okay, Justin. In summary, our approach is very much about buying existing producing assets in the Mediterranean region and enhancing their both reserves and production levels by drilling smart wells, managing costs carefully, and making sure that we make smart decisions about how to deploy our capital.
Okay, and in what areas geographically are you based?
Right now we have an exploration asset in Tunisia, which was the subject of the RNS this morning. We'll come back to that. Mm-hmm. And we have a producing asset in Egypt called East Ghazalat, which we acquired last fall, which our working interest production level is about 200 barrels a day of oil.
Okay, and you've got a gas, is it in Italy, I think, isn't it, as well?
We have a gas storage project that we've been working on for a number of years, which is awaiting a court decision, which we're still waiting for the court, not decision, but a court hearing. And we were promised that late last year, early this year, and we're still waiting.
Okay, well, let's go to today's, RNS, and it's about your permit update in Tunisia. What's happened there?
So, important developments there. The first one, and the subject of the announcement today, was that previously we had two partners who each owned about 6-point-something percent, 6.5% working interest each, and we've agreed to take on their interest in return for no consideration. The reason being twofold. One, it simplifies the structure of the contractors. We're considered to be the contractor group for this asset on behalf of the National Oil Company in Tunisia. So that's one important decision. And secondly, it allows us, if we do, and when we hopefully get a farm-in partner, it simplifies the transaction because we no longer need to get the three parties to agree. There's no preemption rights involved, so it'd be a simple decision by IRG on behalf of the contractor group, which is now just us.
Yeah, and so are you talking to people at the moment, or are you now about to approach people for a farm-in partner?
Well, as anybody who's been following us knows, we've been trying to farm out the license for nearly a year and a half now. As everyone hopefully knows, the circumstances in Tunisia have been quite challenging, both security and politically. We have had a number of parties express interest over the past few months, and this step, we believe, will make this more attractive. But as important, more important than that, is we are now in the process of applying for a further extension to the permit to take it out to August 2017, which would give anyone who did farm in enough time to complete the work program, which we're in discussions with the National Oil Company now about what that would entail. Not that different than what we already have, but just to confirm what we need to do to get the one-year extension.
Okay, and what's the profile of this asset? I mean, what do you know about it? What do we know about it so far?
Well, the company has had a working interest in the permit for many years, over 10 years, from 2004, really. The initial exploration effort from 2004 till 2015 has been very much about the Ordovician geology, which has been the subject of four wells drilled specifically on the so-called Sidi Toui structure. We have then, last year, when we became the operator and the major owner, redid the technical work and felt that there was much more opportunity, or as much opportunity, in the what's called the Akakis, which is a much more conventional type of reservoir and which is much more prone to be targeted by seismic information rather than the Ordovician, which is more difficult to see the quality of the reservoir with seismic alone. And so we think that this makes the prospects in the permit much more attractive, going after the Akakis, which has had many successes in southern Tunisia over the last 10 years. And so we think really much more exciting, or as exciting, as the Ordovician.
Okay, and how are things going in Egypt?
In Egypt, things are going pretty well as can be expected. We're nearing the final stages of the registration process with the Egyptian General Petroleum Company, so we expect to be able to announce some news on that in the next few weeks. And we're in discussions with the operator about how to move forward in terms of approval of budgets and dealing with some of the past costs, which we would like to examine.
Okay. And do you find at the moment that, you know, oil prices have stabilized a little bit? It was above $40, just dipped below. It's coming back towards $40 now. And do you find that's helping a bit?
Well, I think we're all looking for some stability. I think most companies, and we probably no exception to this, would like to have oil prices somewhat higher than they are today. As an acquirer of assets, of course, it's better time for acquirers because the sellers are having to become more realistic. I think the reality is that oil prices will continue to be very volatile. And as we all know, if you read the papers, they're driven not so much by fundamental costs and supply and demand. They're driven as much by political motivation, the OPEC countries and Russia and so on. And so it's very unpredictable what the price is. And therefore, I think we all need to expect continued volatility of the price.
Yeah.
As much as $10 a barrel, either way, around the current price, probably.
Yeah. And in regards to like Tunisia, are you finding that they're trying to be very helpful, because obviously they've been known troubles in the past with terrorism and all that? I mean, are they doing their best to make it a safe place to work?
Well, I believe they do. You know, it's hard to tell until we actually see whether they can go for a period of time without any incidents. But, you know, clearly the international allies of Tunisia, Europeans and North Americans, Americans are doing their best to help the Tunisians secure their borders and to create opportunities for the people within the country. That's really the driver. You know, when people have jobs and are busy working and feeling like life is good, then they worry less about creating trouble and trying to change things. And I do believe the authorities are doing what they can. Of course, you know, all of these countries are in need of increased employment, and foreign investment is always helpful. But, you know, eventually those foreign investments need to be dealt with. I think both the IFC, the International Finance Corporation, and the EBRD are both very interested in making sure that Tunisia and its neighbors are successful. And economically, at least, you know, the whole issue of what's the right political dynamic is something that's way beyond me, frankly.
Yeah. Well, not only you, Greg, most people, I think. Okay. So what's next for Independent Resources, Greg, timeline wise?
Well, I think we're hoping that we can get agreement on the 1-year extension in Tunisia. That will be one important development. The next one is to get some progress on the registration in Egypt for East Ghazalat. And as I've said in the past, you know, we're continuing to look at acquisitions of these types of assets, those that are on or near production, where we can see how we can apply better technology to the development of those reserves, whether it's drilling or better seismic or better completions, and obviously in this day and age, better cost management.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, listen, Greg, give us, summarize in three sort of positive points why someone should put Independent Resources on their watch list.
Well, in my mind, it's very simple. There's a lot of upside to be created. I think our share price is depressed because people have not got clarity on what's involved in getting this registration in Egypt completed. We will start getting revenue coming as soon as that happens. Egyptians do want foreign direct investment and new investors. We count in that category. I think the situation is stabilizing in Tunisia, and we see that also in the neighbors, particularly in Libya. See some interesting developments there. And there are a lot of opportunities out there, and we have a very strong team who can take advantage of these opportunities and create the value for our shareholders. So I think there's multiples of upside of our share price compared to where we are today.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and as a team there, you've got a lot of experience. And with those assets there, you're a market cap of just above $500,000, which is, considering what you've got going on there, that does seem slightly undervalued, Dave. Obviously, that's down to the person, doing the investing, I suppose, isn't it?
Exactly. I think slightly undervalued, the modest statement. I think it's seriously undervalued.
Okay. Marvellous, Greg. Lovely to chat to you, and I look forward to hearing some more when you get some more news coming out.
Okay, thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Executive Chairman of Be Heard Group, ticker code BHRD. It's Peter Scott. Peter, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, listen, I had a heads up on your company by a private investor, and I read through some of the information there on your website, and I was very interested. And so I know a bit about your company, but for people listening who've never heard of Be Heard Group, can you give us a broad outline, Peter, as to what you're all about?
Yeah, I'll try and give you the short version rather than the long one. effectively, I sense an opportunity to create a mid-market group focused on the digital sector within marketing services, e-commerce, and tech. As I'm sure you're all aware, there are dramatic changes happening in the marketplace in which advertisers and marketing companies and Their advisors are operating with massive fragmentations of budgets, with obviously massive changes in terms of the old broadcast model, which is now moving to streaming and video on demand and time shift and various other things. And of course, the impact of social media. You have seen today that Facebook is now bringing video in on a much more important basis and scale going forward. So with all of that, we sensed there was an opportunity to bring together, to cluster together, businesses which were reaching the point of, how will I put it? So a point of, not collision, but getting to the point where they weren't necessarily able to get to the next level themselves, but they were also not necessarily interested in simply going off and being a rounding error in one of the larger groups. And so we set about verifying that opportunity. I worked with some very, very good consultants who produced a report to verify my view of the world. And then I set about screening and looking and finding an opportunity. And we did that with our first target called Agenda 21. And once we got that to heads, we then sought the vehicle and we reversed into a main board listed shell, which was called Mithril, and then delisted and readmitted on AIM on the back of a fundraising. And as you know, we're now suspended. We've announced that we are in process with a second acquisition, and obviously news of that will be confirmed back to the market sooner rather than later.
Okay, very interesting. So can you take us through, what's your background then, Peter, for people who don't know?
So I'm an ad man out of the, you know, the post-Mad Men era, but it was still extremely good and a lot of fun. So I built, I was a co-founder of an ad agency called WCRS, which we took public. I then morphed that into what became Aegis, and we became dominant in the independent media buying sector. I left that, then spent 10 years out of the industry, then came back and bought back my old company. I led a management buyout of that, and we then morphed that into something called the Engine Group and built that to about 1,200 people from 120 when we bought the business back, a different business model, and which was all about integration of what was an increasingly fragmented industry. And that was then sold on to private equity in 2014.
Very interesting. So you are, you know, a very successful track record, and I assume you have, you know, ambitions for Be Heard Group. And what are they? I mean, what ultimately, like you said, you want to be mid-tier, is that right?
Well, we see there were some players in that middle ground, but they tended to be taken out by some of the bigger boys. And so we see an opportunity to fill that space. We certainly can see the ability to build revenue in excess of 100 million over the next 3 to 4 years. There are some very interesting companies out there. We have a very different proposition to that which the large groups will bring. And we're getting good traction and good hearings in the marketplace. So the critical thing then is to be able to connect these businesses in a way which is meaningful. I.e. so we can add value, we're not just doing a stamp collection. And as we grow the business and bring new partners in, and it won't just be a UK business, it will span into Europe and into the US, then obviously we'll be spending quite a lot of time on defining best practice, on consolidating back offices, on adding value and opportunity in terms of business development, and obviously in terms of tech and investment there.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at you know, your final results here. Very interesting. You have you know, quite a bit of cash end of year. You had around about 8 million, and was the turnover was at 2.3, and you're only valued at the moment at 13 million. So you've got a lot of fuel in the tank there, haven't you?
Well, the results were only for 5 weeks, so we wouldn't get too carried away with those because we didn't complete and relist until the 25th, I think, or thereabouts of November. So it was a little bit of a Russian scramble to get the results out quickly enough. The cash figure in the balance sheet is prior to certain distributions that need to be made to the vendors of Addenda 21, but we've still got a nice cash balance in there, and obviously we will be going to the market in the next week or two in order to raise funds for the second transaction.
Okay, excellent. And so if we're looking on our, you just mentioned there, you know, a bit of a date in the diary, but I mean, if we look at, a timeline wise, what's next for Beherd Group?
Next for Beherd Group is to complete this transaction, relist, complete the fundraising, and that will all take us through until the beginning of May. At the moment, we're hoping that we will lift the suspension sometime in the middle of thereabouts of April, and then we'll go through to completion of this transaction. And all I can say after that is watch this space.
Yeah, and I suppose, like you said, you saw this this gap in the market there. And is it quite an exciting time? Because, like you say, the industry has changed. It's, revolutionized, with the online, digital and everything, as opposed to traditional print and all that. So, I mean, are you genuinely excited as to what's ahead?
We are massively excited. We're seeing some extraordinarily interesting companies which are doing some very clever stuff in terms of analytics, in programmatic buying and other areas. There is an absolute revolution which is happening, and everybody's aware of that. I was at a presentation that Google gave the other day, and they were talking about by 2020, I think the number was 7 billion connected consumers with 25 billion devices. And that plays 3 or 3.5 billion today with 10 or 12 billion devices. Well, if you think what those devices are, they're called smartphones and they're called pads. So everybody is transacting, everybody is teaching, everybody is learning, everybody is communicating, everybody is purchasing on those devices. So there is a dramatic shift which is happening. And we are delighted to be, I believe and hope at the forefront of the change which is going to be occurring.
Marvellous. Well, lovely to chat to you, Peter. And, there was plenty of information there. But if you could summarise maybe in 3 points as to why, an investor should put Beherd Group on their watch list, what would you say?
Well, I guess the answer to that would be that, we are a small, young company. Only just completed our first transaction, but we have stated what our ambitions are going to be. And all I can say is watch the space and see whether we're able to deliver that. Secondly, we're operating in a market which is going through seismic change. We're aware of that seismic change, and we think that there is going to be massive opportunity going forward as a result of the changes which are happening structurally and in terms of marketplaces, and in terms of consumers and the like. And I guess the third thing would be we're just a nice group of guys.
Yeah, well, I was going to say there, if you didn't include the management there, you're underselling yourself. So I'm glad you added that. Peter, it's lovely to chat to you, and hopefully you'll have some more news out soon, and maybe we'll connect again. Thanks very much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, today's Penny Stock with Potential has been submitted by Michael. And it's Europa Oil and Gas, EOG is the ticker. It's an oil and gas exploration, development and production company. Had them on the podcast a while back, I think I recalled. How many shares in issue? 244 million. Current market price or share price is 5.75. Market cap, 14 million. Revenue, 2.2 million, 31st of July 2015. Profit was a loss of 1.8 million. How much cash or debt does the company have? A net balance of 3.1 million, again at 31st of July. List three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, they have secured licenses offshore Ireland where a CPR identified significant potential volumes of hydrocarbons. Gross mean unrisked prospective resources of approximately 1.5 billion barrels of oil equivalent across three prospects. And number two, they've sent an FDP to the OGA to start production later this year on the Wrestle Basin in North Lincolnshire, which they have a 33% working interest in. They've tested three wells in the basin for 28 days, and barrels of oil per day was 700, with the possibility of another 500 a day from another well in the basin. And reason number three, they have licenses onshore in France, One where they managed to farm out to Vermilion. Vermilion will assume 100% of the cost of a work program of up to 2.4 million after this price is reached. Europa will be responsible for 20% share of future costs. That's EOG, quite an asset there. Worth checking out, Europa Oil and Gas. Don't forget, please, do your own research. And the review of the day, and this podcast is dedicated to you, Masman 17, that's your username on iTunes. And this is the review. 5 stars, by the way. I've now got 128 five-star reviews on iTunes, and it's much appreciated. But Masman says, very informative and entertaining. There's a man who doesn't mess around with words, yeah? A little word efficiency there. I'll just read it again because it's so short. Very informative and entertaining. Thank you very much, Masman. I do appreciate that. And if you get any value whatsoever from this podcast, please click the link here at foxmarkets.co.uk/blog. And you'll see the link to iTunes in one of the blogs that I've done there. And just write a little review. And if you give a 5-star rating, I will feature you on a future podcast. Thanks for listening. Much was appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, PayLater, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.